Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 417. Yes, yes, I understand. I said 417 last episode. I was wrong. Last episode was 416. This is 417. Let's get it. This is the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm not really asking you to agree with me. I'm asking you to hear me out. You know why consistency is so important? You know why, in some cases, uniformity is so important? Because it allows the people from the outside looking in, and it allows people to understand how you come up with decisions that you come up with. But what I'm saying is it helps you understand how an organization, an entity makes the decision that they make. You see, uniformity and a solid criteria would help the NBA get out of the situation that they're in right now. One topic of conversation that obviously is yearly in the NBA is who is going to win the MVP. And one of the hardest, the reason why I started this episode with it's important to have some type of consistency, some type of criteria that is concrete, is because the NBA finds himself in a situation where you have three candidates and each one has a case to win. And what I mean by that is you have Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Luka Doncic. If you look back in history, each one of these players can go back and say, well, X won, Y won, so I should win. And that is why it is so difficult when the criteria for this award continues to change. You see, all three of these players, obviously Luka, Shai, and Jokic, are incredible players. And all of them have a case to win the MVP. Obviously, I mean, not obviously, but at the end of this segment, I'm going to give who I feel should be the MVP. But before that, let's look at each one in their case. Nikola Jokic is the best player in the NBA. The way that he dominates the game, the way that he can affect it on the offense, the way that he can affect it a little bit on the defense, you know, his passing ability, his scoring ability. I don't think we've ever seen a big man like Nikola Jokic. That's kind of the saying that we hear regularly when we talk about Nikola Jokic. There has never been another Nikola Jokic. And the fact that he has the Nuggets, I think as we speak, as the number one or number two seed is incredible. Even though, yes, they did win the championship last year and they still have their championship core, Nikola Jokic has continued to be the best player in the world. Obviously, you can argue for Giannis being the best player or Joel Embiid when healthy, but a person's name that always is in those conversations is Nikola Jokic. And this year is no different. I mean, well, no, his MVP numbers from, 2 years ago are higher than this year. He is averaging 26.6 points a game, 12.4 rebounds, and 9 assists. Again, those are not numbers that you see from a center. And if you look back, some of those LeBron James awards, I think the Kevin Durant award, no, some of those LeBron James awards can justify why Nikola Jokic would win this award. When LeBron James is winning, he has 4 MVPs, and every single one of those MVPs, he was the best player in the world. And the NBA rewarded him by giving him the MVP. Now, he might not have had the most statistical year. He might not have led the league in scoring. He might not have done all that, but he was the best player. And obviously, if you're the best player, at times you're looked at as the MVP. So that's why LeBron James won that award. Well, Nikola Jokic is clearly the best player in the league this year. And I understand why he's leading the vote getting. So if Nikola Jokic wins, I get it. I understand. But I also would understand why people would say, well, Nikola Jokic, the 2 years he won the MVP, he had better numbers than he has now. And while, yes, he is the best player in the NBA, if we're going to go off numbers and we're going to go off, you know, field goal percentage, everything, Nikola Jokic just had better years. So if you're going to give it to Nikola Jokic, why give it to him where this is his worst year and there's people that have stats better? You see, again, that's why criteria is important, because these arguments can be had. These arguments can be made. These arguments can be brought to the table. Now let's get to Luka Doncic. While Luka, Luka right now leads the league in scoring. He's averaging 33.9 points a game. He's also second in the league in assist, 9.8 points, and he's averaging 9.2 rebounds a game. Luka finds himself in that same vein and same arc or conversation that James Harden was in, that let's say Russell Westbrook was in when they won their MVP. While no, it's very hard for me to look at the Dallas Mavericks and think to myself, they're a legitimate title contender. And I think right now they're like fifth or sixth in the West. So if you look at Nikola Jokic, he has his team higher in the standings than Luka, as well as Shai Gilgeous. But when we talk about numbers, Luka is probably one of the best statistical players in the league. Well, no, he's not the best defender. He will never be the best defender. He has never been the best defender. He is arguably the best scorer in basketball. And if you're in Nikola Jokic's, if you're in Luka Doncic's camp, you can say, well, you gave it to James Harden when he was on the Rockets. You gave it to Russell Westbrook when he was on the Oklahoma City Thunder. You gave it to Kevin Durant when he was on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And while they probably weren't the best players in the league, well, they definitely weren't the best players in the league, they had the best statistical years. So that is why you should give it to Luka. Again, it's all about having a uniform criteria. Because, quiet as it's kept, whatever side that you pick, you're not wrong. There's a lot of people that think that Luka should be the MVP, and I'm not saying they're wrong. Just like there's a lot of people that say that Nikola Jokic should be the MVP, I'm not saying they're wrong. What I'm saying is the reason why there's so much confusion, the reason why there's so much talk around this is because the NBA has put themselves in a situation that they now, you know, the saying, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Now, somebody is going to not win this and it's going to be an ultimate snub. Now, let's get to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Shai kind of finds himself in a situation that Derrick Rose was in. Shai kind of finds himself in a situation that I think 2015 Steph Curry was in. No, Shai isn't the best player in the world. Now, in 2016-17, when Steph won the MVP, you can say he definitely was the best player in the world, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not the best player in the world. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander isn't top of any numbers. He's averaging 30.4 points a game, which is third in the NBA. He's averaging 5.6 assists, which is 60th in the NBA. And he's averaging, 5.6 rebounds. And he's averaging 6.2 assists, which is 20th in the NBA. So Shai Gilgeous isn't leading the league in anything. However, like Derrick Rose, who was the youngest MVP of all time, like 2015 Steph Curry. When you look at the team around them, when you look at that Bulls team, when you look at that Golden State team, the expectation wasn't to be as good as they were. Nobody, yes, I understand that they're, the Oklahoma City Thunder have a lot of young pieces. And everyone knows that they have a lot of young pieces. But nobody expected the Oklahoma City Thunder to currently be third in the West. Now, mind you, the West is by far the hardest conference in the NBA. We'll talk about that a little bit when we'll talk about the play-in, but the West is leaps and bounds, at least this year, better than the East. And you have some fierce competition, whether we talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, whether we talk about the Denver Nuggets, who are the reigning champions, whether we talk about the Phoenix Suns, whether we talk about the Golden State Warriors, the LA Lakers, the Oklahoma City. Like, it is tough in the West. And going into this season, when you saw a bunch of people, including myself, because I did this as well, and I said this, when people did their preseason power rankings or, you know, preseason playoff predictions, the hardest team to rank was the Oklahoma City Thunder, because you see the talent there. When Chet Holmgren, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, you see the talent. But you also understand the youth, and you also understand that they're a young team. Well, the fact that they are, I think, third in the West right now is solely because of the leadership and the play of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. What he's doing is he's taking a team that, while young and while very talented, has no business being as good as they are in a loaded Western Conference. Because of his play, because of his leadership, because of the being the MVP of that team, he has elevated them to the third seed in the West. And because of that, a lot of people question, well, without Shai Gilgeous, there's no way they would be good, but there's no way that they'd be this good. And on top of that, Shai Gilgeous is putting up numbers that you don't see someone his age, you don't see someone that has to carry the load like he carries is able to do. Bro, Shai Gilgeous is 25 years old. Again, man, when the NBA is probably the worst at this. I credit the, obviously basketball is my first love, my favorite sport. But what I will say is the NBA sucks at this. It doesn't suck at handing out MVPs and handing out awards. It sucks at not only explaining how someone got an award, but handing out these awards because it's so inconsistent. The fact that, and no offense to him, obviously he deserved it because he won, but the fact that a Steve Nash can win two in a row the same year where he doesn't lead the league in scoring, lead the league in assist, you know what I'm saying? Like, or how you can give it to a Joel Embiid when Nikola Jokic is having a better statistical year than he did when he won two straight. Again, I'm not saying that anyone that has won an MVP should not have won. I'm not saying that. I wouldn't say that. But what I am saying is the NBA has to do a better job at explaining how a player won this award, because there's a lot of players that I'm sure may get a vote, may get some type of consideration, but could have a case if you look back at previous winners, could have a case like a Jalen Brunson and what he's doing for the New York Knicks, especially seeing as though Julius Randle has missed most of the year due to injury. And now I think the Knicks are like a game or two away from being outside the two seed in the East, or Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum has the Celtics not only the best team record-wise in the league, but so far ahead of the second seed in the East. again, man, we have to, there has to be some type of understanding as to how people get awards that they get. Now, let me explain to you who I think should win the MVP. Now, again, I do think it is between those three. It's between Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Luka Doncic. I think you have to reward who is what we're seeing compared to what we expected to see. That should obviously give away who I think should win the MVP. I think it should be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Yes, I know that he's not averaging as many points as Luka Doncic. I understand that he, you know, the Nuggets are higher in the standings than the Thunder, but that was expected. I expected Luka Doncic to be amongst the leaders in scoring. I expected Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets to be one of the top seeds in the NBA, seeing as though they just won a championship and their core stayed the same. So I expected all that. What I did not expect is the Oklahoma City Thunder to be this good. I expected them to be good, but not good enough that I would not be surprised, even with their youth, if they won a playoff series or two because of the leadership and because of being the MVP of his team, and that is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Again, this is, I'm not mad if Luka wins. I understand leading the league in scoring, putting up some incredible numbers, as many triple-doubles as he had. You know, side note, the triple-double rebrand has been crazy to me, because I remember when Russell Westbrook was averaging triple-doubles for an entire season and people were poo-pooing it and people were just saying, oh, well, you know, it is what it is. Now it's like so glorified when Nikola Jokic gets one or Luka Doncic gets one. I think it's funny. And don't get me wrong, shouts out to them for getting it. A triple-double is not easy, but it's just funny how when we look at someone like those players get it, it's incredible to the game. But when Russell Westbrook gets it, it's like, yeah, well, you know, it's triple-double. It is what it is. So, but yeah. I think that there's a lot of deserving players to win the MVP. But I would give it to Shai Gilgeous because of expectation. And nobody expected Shai Gilgeous and this Oklahoma City Thunder to be this good. While, yes, they probably expected them to be good, not this good. Not good enough that you could, I could honestly, I'm not saying they will, but I could honestly see them in the NBA Finals. That's how good this team is, and it's led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a player who I knew was good, but I didn't think was going to be this good. But with the NBA, man, they have to better this. This has to be better. They have to make it show us the guideline that you use, because it seems like. And it not even seems, because it's clear as day. This guideline changes every single season, every single year. And you see it by the winners. Again, I'm not saying James Harden. I'm not saying Russell Westbrook. I'm not saying, you know, some of these players, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. I'm not saying that they didn't deserve it. But what I'm saying is each one of them had a different case as to how they won and why they deserve to win. And every single year, you can also look and say, well, that player probably could have won. That player probably should have won. But because there isn't a level of uniformity, there isn't a guideline that they continue to go by. To me, I don't, you know, it's confusing to me, but hey. Congratulations to whoever will win. Obviously, we'll talk about it here. And I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should be the MVP of the league. So, speaking of MVP, there comes when you're good, when you have an MVP on a team, when there's major movements, but the best pieces are still there. There is expectations to every season. In fact, let me back up a little bit. There's expectations to every season. I've talked about this before, but when you go into a season, every team has expectations. And most of the time, every team has an expectation to win a championship, even though there are some championship aspirations that are more realistic than others. When the Milwaukee Bucks got Damian Lillard, obviously they had to trade away Drew Holiday and trade away Grayson Allen, but they got Damian Lillard. They got the quote-unquote big catch of the offseason. The expectation for a team that already won a championship, that already has Giannis Antetokounmpo, that expectation raised dramatically. It raised not just for the Milwaukee Bucks, not just for Giannis Antetokounmpo, not just for Damian Lillard, but for the Eastern Conference. Because I think the Bucks is the last team in the East that won a championship back in 2020, I think, or 2021, I'm sorry. As we look today, you can say that the Bucks are one of the biggest disappointments in the NBA. I know it's crazy when you look, they're the second seed, I think, in the East. Damian Lillard is still Damian Lillard. Giannis is still Giannis. But you can look at this Bucks team and understand that there is things that aren't how they're supposed to be. This team is not firing on the cylinders that they're supposed to fire on. I attribute that to a lot of things. I attributed that to losing a Drew Holiday, in that I don't think people understand. No, Drew Holiday is not better than Damian Lillard as a player. Like, if we're at a park and we're picking pickup players and we're picking a team of five, and you have Damian Lillard and you have Drew Holiday right there, obviously Damian Lillard is getting picked up before Drew Holiday. And I think Drew Holiday understands that. But Drew Holiday and Damian Lillard approach the game differently. And Drew Holiday affects the game in a much better way for the Bucks than Damian Lillard does. And I think I'm not saying Damian Lillard's trash. I'm not saying that Drew Holiday is a better player than Dame. What I'm saying is the Bucks scheme, how the Bucks operate, Drew Holiday was a better fit for them. Especially when you see that the Bucks fired Adrian Griffin and got Doc Rivers. I think that was probably the biggest mistake that they did this year. No offense to Doc Rivers, but Doc Rivers, his resume speaks for itself as to why people would question his ability to coach talent. Somebody said it, and I agree completely, man. Doc Rivers probably has coached the most talent in NBA history for one coach. Tracy McGrady, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Tony Allen, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, James Harden, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, now Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard. The fact that he's done that and only has one championship. And a lot of those teams did make deep playoff runs, but had epic flameouts. And we talked about how it seems that Doc Rivers doesn't understand how to coach score first point guards. Because the most success that he's seen is with a pass-first point guard, i.e. Rondo, i.e. Chris Paul. But as we sit here today, Giannis injures his hamstring. Now, they're saying it's not as serious. They're saying that he should be able to be back before the, or back the start of the playoffs. But this is, people are hearkening back to Kevin Durant. And I think that this is drastically different because Kevin Durant hurt the hamstring that is not his. I think he hurt his right hamstring, which isn't the hamstring that you're supposed to push off of, you know. That's not the hamstring he pushed off of. He pushed off the left. So that's why people were saying, hey, Kevin Durant arguably can come back. Well, Giannis, he hurt the left one. And that's the one where, you know, you push off of, you jump off of to dunk. And obviously we know Giannis's game is a power game. He's north-south. He's get to the rim. So this could be a huge thing for not just Giannis moving forward this season, but the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, yes, I think there's like two or three games left in the season, but this could definitely, let's not get it twisted. They need Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is arguably arguably the best player in the league. They need him to make any noise, even in the Eastern Conference. They need him if there is any chance to upset a team like the Boston Celtics. But the reason why I'm talking about this is because I think this underlines, or this is a headline in a disappointing magazine that has been the Milwaukee Bucks this year. Again, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Yes, you are what your record says you are, but you have to watch the games. And too many times, the Milwaukee Bucks have just looked terrible. Too many times they were just, before they beat the Celtics, they were just on a 4-game losing streak. And I think in those 4 games, they played 2 of the 4 worst teams in the NBA, record-wise. I'm not saying that they can't win a championship. I'm not saying they won't win. But what I'm saying is when you get a Damian Lillard, when you get a Giannis, or when you have a Giannis Antetokounmpo, and this core won you a championship just, what, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, you're expecting a championship return. And it doesn't seem like that is going to be the case this year. And this injury obviously is going to be looming over this team in the playoffs, because there's no way in heaven or hell they think that they are going to win anything without Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's just a fact. But I will say this. We could look up and see this team get bounced the first and second round, and we would argue giving up Drew Holiday, giving up Grayson Allen to get a perennial superstar, a NBA All-75 team member in Damian Lillard and Giannis. This could be one of the biggest failures in NBA history. You know, let me explain to you guys something real quick before we move on. Let me explain why they're struggling. No, I don't think that Giannis is an overrated defender. No, I don't think that Brooke Lopez is an overrated defender. What I think is, when you lose, there's a difference between knowing how to play defense and understanding defense. Obviously, defense is stopping the person in front of you, stopping the other team from scoring. Anybody can play defense. Effort allows you to play defense, and anyone can give effort. But there's a difference between understanding defense and embodying defense, and that is what Drew Holiday brought to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, again, we've talked about, and it's obvious that Damian Lillard is a better player than Jrue Holiday. But for this team, while yes, the Milwaukee Bucks struggled mightily with scoring the ball outside of the paint. You know, with Chris Middleton being in and out the lineup due to injury, Jrue Holiday isn't the type of scorer that can keep the team afloat. Damian Lillard obviously is. He's one of the greatest scorers in NBA history. But when you give up a Jrue Holiday, you give up a player that understands defense, and you give up a player that understands schemes and that understands and thinks how he can make his team better defensively, whether that's defensive switches, whether that's talking, whether that's just having a defensive mindset. While yes, Damian Lillard can give effort and play defense, he does not have that defensive mindset. He doesn't understand the being of defense. So that puts Giannis and Brooke Lopez and, you know, Chris Middleton at a disadvantage. So now what you didn't have to worry about in Jrue Holiday, which was backcourt scoring or backcourt defense, now your backcourt is getting blown through, whether that's actually has been Damian Lillard and Malik Beasley. It's getting blown through, so now you have to come up from the basket more, which is why the Bucks allow more paint baskets than they've done since Giannis was there. Damian Lillard doesn't understand, and I'm not saying he's dumb, but he doesn't understand the intricacies of defense like Jrue Holiday did, which puts Giannis and Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez at a disadvantage. Now, yes, I understand one of the biggest issues that the Bucks have suffered with is half court offense, and Damian Lillard helps that in droves, but it's kind of like a give or take. So as we look, the Bucks can find themselves in a very tough position. And that is, you look up, you get to the offseason, and not only do you not have a championship, but you give up Jrue Holiday, which is on a team and a very important piece to a team that record-wise is by far the best team in the NBA. And he just got a 3-year extension. Shouts out to him. You made that move. You have Damian Lillard. You have Giannis. And you have Doc Rivers. Did you know that the Bucks are paying 3 coaches right now? That's crazy. What I'm saying is decisions matter. And making the right decision, wrong decision, can drastically change the makeup of your franchise for now moving forward. And there have been a lot of questionable things. And I'm not saying that Damian Lillard is a question mark, but what I'm saying is when you commit to Damian Lillard and you give up Jrue Holiday and Grayson Allen, who were your two best defenders in the backcourt, you get what you get. And now you have a Giannis who has a hamstring injury on his dominant hamstring. That could bode extremely costly in the postseason. I hope for a speedy recovery. I would like to see everyone healthy, but that is what we're dealing with. So, yeah. Speaking of, we talked about East and West, and we talked about the playoffs. And as much as there is excitement surrounding the playoffs in the NBA, which obviously there's excitement, most of the excitement right now is in the play-in, especially when we talk about in the West. Now, in fact, I'll probably start with the East, but when we talk about the West and the East, the play-in is so fascinating because you see star power written all over the play. you see teams, you see stars that are in the plan that probably shouldn't be in the plan, but they are. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you guys who I think is the biggest threats coming out of the one team that I think is the biggest threat coming out of both the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference playing. Let's start with the East, seeing as though that's not as exciting, unfortunately, as the West. You have the Philadelphia 76ers, you have the Miami Heat, you have the Chicago Bulls, and you have the Atlanta Hawks. Let me first get out of the way. I don't care if the Bulls or Hawks both make it out. They're making absolutely no noise. The Bulls have been so inconsistent this year, and the Hawks have been inconsistent this year. It doesn't matter who they play. It doesn't matter if they, shockingly, because I think it would be a shock if either team gets out the play-in. I do not see a road where both... You build habits in the regular season. And the habits that both the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks have developed is inconsistency. They have lived in this inconsistent realm. And while that may be good for some players, that may be good for some teams, it's not when you're already at a deficit in terms of talent. The Chicago Bulls and Atlanta Hawks aren't the most talented teams. Let's not get that confused. No one is looking at the Chicago Bulls, even though you have DeMar DeRozan. No one's looking at them saying, hey, they can make some noise. No. Now, if they had the team that they were supposed to have a couple years ago, Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, you know, Vucevic, Alec Caruso, then maybe. But they have not had that team since the trade happened. And as we look today, Zach LaVine is injured. So, yeah. And Lonzo Ball, he's been injured for like 3 years now. So, I don't know. And same with the Atlanta Hawks. Yo, they, while they have DeJounte Murray and Trae Young, Trae Young's been out most of the season due to injury. So, I just don't see any way that both the Chicago Bulls or Atlanta Hawks can make it out of the play-in, which means that I think that is going to be the Philadelphia 76ers and the Miami Heat. Now, let me sit here and talk about the Heat for a second. I think Kendrick Perkins, who I don't agree with obviously everything that he says, and most of the things he says is his opinion, so I'm not saying he's right or wrong. But one thing that I do agree with Kendrick Perkins, he said this, and I think at halftime of the Miami Heat-Dallas Mavericks game. We as fans, we as consumers have to make a decision about the Miami Heat. I understand that there's a playoff Jimmy thing for Jimmy Butler. We know that Jimmy Butler doesn't really take the regular season seriously. He takes the playoffs more seriously. Obviously, we see that with stats. It's not just me speaking it. Playoff Jimmy is an actual thing. And there's multiple people that continuously say that the Miami Heat is the most dangerous team in the East. That's even over, you know, the Celtics. That's even over the Bucks. It's even over the Knicks. They're saying the Miami Heat, because of what we've seen in the past, they're saying that Miami Heat is the most dangerous team. But we have to be honest about what we're seeing. In the preseason, I said that the only reason why I was putting any faith, any stock into the Miami Heat is because of what they've done in the past. And they have Eric Spoelstra, who is one of the greatest NBA coaches of all time. You have to build some type of sweat equity in the regular season. You have to build some type of consistency in the regular season. And kind of like the Chicago Bulls, kind of like the Atlanta Hawks, the habits that the Miami Heat have built in this regular season is inconsistency, whether that's Jimmy Butler in and out of this lineup, whether that's almost their entire roster being in and out of the lineup outside of Bam Adebayo due to injury. And when they play some of the top teams, they lose most of those games badly. So we have to make a decision saying that, hey, are we going to let the Miami Heat, are we going to bang on what we've seen in the past with Miami as far as the playoffs or what we've seen this year? Because there is nothing, and I mean nothing, about this year that should make you think that the Miami Heat are good enough to make any type of noise in the playoffs. Yes, they have Jimmy Butler. Yes, they have Bam. Yes, they have Tyler Herro. Jaime Jaquez Jr. has been an incredible rookie, but that ain't gonna get it done, player. At least it hasn't got it done in the regular season. Now, I understand that there's a different Jimmy Butler in the regular season compared to playoffs, but at some point, the present has to take precedent. And presently, this Miami Heat team is not that good, honestly. Which leaves one team, and to me, this is an obvious thing for the East, and that is the Philadelphia 76ers being the quote-unquote sleeper, quote-unquote dark horse of the playoffs, meaning that they are the scariest team to come out of the Eastern play-in. You have a player that, if it wasn't for injury, he would be this year's MVP, and that is Joel Embiid. Came back, he looks healthy, even though he did have a scare the other night where he stopped on the leg that, you know, his, or on the meniscus that he definitely tore. And he got up gingerly. But you have Joel Embiid, you have Tyrese Maxey, who has emerged. I think he's leading, he's a leading candidate for most improved player. And he can erupt, obviously what we've seen this year, he can erupt for 50 on any given night. And you have a team in the Philadelphia 76ers that have played great around them. They got Buddy Hield, who has been a great addition. They have Tobias Harris, who is playing within himself this year. To me, that's the obvious team. The only reason why they're in the play-in is because Joel Embiid missed majority of the year due to the torn meniscus. But they were playing pretty well before he got hurt. They were like the third seed. So I think it's, I understand that people are trying to bank on, well, hey, we know what the Miami Heat can do. We know what Jimmy Butler does in the playoffs. Okay, but, you know, like at some point, the regular season has to matter to somebody. And the Miami Heat have not put anything on paper this year to make me think that they can beat the Philadelphia 76ers when Joel Embiid is playing to his caliber, when Tyrese Maxey is playing to his caliber. I don't think that this Miami Heat team, especially a team that has struggled to score all season, they're one of the worst scoring teams in the league. I don't see it. You know, I just don't see it. So I think in the East, the biggest threat coming out of the play-in is obviously healthy Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid and with Tyrese Maxey. Now, the West is a little different. The West is why we are talking so heavily about the play-in this year. Now, yes, the play-in, I think this is a 3 or 4 year thing at this point, but the reason why the play-in is getting so much coverage is because of the West and because of the potential star power that the West, Western Conference play-in has. Ooh, my fault. I mean, right now, if the league stopped, or if the playoff or regular season stopped today, you have the Phoenix Suns, Sacramento Kings, Golden State Warriors, and LA Lakers in the play-in. Meaning you have Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, all in the play-in. The West is a gauntlet, man. The West, we talked about the Bucks, you know, when we were talking about Giannis, and we said that they went on a four-game losing streak where they lost like the Wizards, they lost to the Raptors, and they lost to two other teams. While that was not a death sentence in the East, that could possibly be a death sentence in the West. Think about this. From the sixth seed to the 10th seed, there is like a three-game separation. Right now, the sixth seed is the New Orleans Pelicans, and they're 48-32. The 10th seed is the LA Lakers, and they're 45-35. The margin of error is so small for the Western Conference because of the star power that's there. And kind of like the gripe that I have with the Milwaukee or the Miami Heat, I kind of take that same criteria, which is I look at the equity that you've built up in the regular season. And that's how I determine who is the biggest threat. Obviously, names matter and their history matters, but I'm looking solely at, or it's not solely, but I'm looking more about this year's regular season, which is why I can eliminate, in my opinion, the Sacramento Kings. While they're really good, while I think Sabonis has the longest double-double streak in NBA history for a regular season, I think, they have been the most inconsistent in the play-in. And yes, that's even with the Golden State Warriors. Losing Malik Monk, I don't know when he's going to come back, but losing Malik Monk was huge. And seeing as though he was, and I think probably still is, the leading candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, that's going to be big. And on top of that, this team, this team probably out of all the teams in the play-in have the biggest case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde syndrome, and that is, when they're on fire, they look unstoppable. They look like a team that could find themselves in the NBA Finals. But then they have, the very next night, they can look god-awful defensively. If De'Aaron Fox isn't hitting shots, if Sabonis is getting a low tier or a low-end double-double, which is like 10 and 11, they have no shot. And I've seen that too many times. On top of that, they're playing, if they start today, they're playing against the Golden State Warriors, who I think is a better team than them, when they're firing on all cylinders. So I'm not going to dismiss them, but I don't think that the Kings have a shot of winning, making out the play-in, especially when you see the talent that is littered throughout the play-in. Then I got to go to the Lakers. The Lakers is probably the most interesting team in this plan because of that flip switch thing. And that's kind of what the West has going for it is what the reason why it was so hard to pick the one or the biggest, let's say, contender to come out the plane is because when you look at all these teams, even the Kings, I know I just took them out, but even the Kings, when they flip the switch, when they're on firing on all cylinders, every single one of those teams, even the Kings, look damn near unstoppable. And that's the same with the LA Lakers. When they're arguably the biggest team in the West, when you have LeBron, AD, Jackson Hayes is in there, when you have Torian Prince, when you have D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, they are a big team. Spencer Dinwiddie, they are a big team. And when they come to play defensively, because they have such a height and size advantage over a lot of these teams, they can impose their will defensively. The issue is there are times when they do not, they're not playing defense and they're not good enough as an entire team to stick with, like, let me see something. Yeah, they average 117 points a game, but they also give up 117 points. So, yeah. You have LeBron James, who miraculously, surprisingly, at his age, is still playing top tier. No, he's not the LeBron James of the Cleveland years. He's definitely not the LeBron James of the Miami Heat. But he's still a really, really, really good player. And you have Anthony Davis, who, when he's on, he can... And I hate saying that about Anthony Davis, but that's the truth. When Anthony Davis has come to play, when Anthony Davis is on and firing all cylinders, he is a top five player in the league. But, and that's, I think, the biggest issue with his game outside of, you know, his injury history, is that Anthony Davis, and we've talked about this on this podcast, a lot of people talk about it, his biggest consistency is being inconsistent. Because one night he'll give you 41 and 20. Like, God. Then the next night he'll give you 15 and 10. Like, wait. One night he is clearly the best player in the league. The next night you look up, they're in a dogfight with Detroit. And he's like, oh, shoot, I forgot Anthony Davis was even on this team. You know? Because of that, now I will say that them having LeBron, them having Anthony Davis, and them being the biggest team in play-in, definitely gives them credence to be a threat. I mean, any team that has LeBron James is a threat. But their inconsistency, especially shooting the ball and especially defensively, again, they average 117 and give up 117. That is why I'm probably going to take them out. I think they could win it. Win the play-in. But I don't really give them much of a shot if they do make it out the play-in, especially seeing as though they fell all the way to the 10th seed. So now they have to hope Golden State loses out and they have to hope they get out of that 10 seed, because that means they have to. They were in the 8th seed, and they would just have to win one game, I think. That's not the case anymore. So, I got the Lakers out, man. So, to me, it's between the Golden State Warriors and Phoenix Suns. I understand. The Golden State Warriors is the smallest team in the NBA. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. They're playing Tristan Jackson or Trace Jackson Jr. Trace Jackson at the center, and he's 6'8". Like, they are the shortest team in the NBA. However, when they flip the switch and when they're firing on all cylinders, they are the most lethal team in the NBA as far as shooting the ball. You have the greatest shooter of all time. In my humble opinion, when he's on, you have the second greatest shooter of all time in Klay Thompson. I mean, just the other night, I don't foresee this ever happening again, but just the other night, Draymond Green went 5 for 6 from three. Jonathan Kuminga has emerged as inarguably their second best player this year. The thing that I am going to... Okay. The reason why... I'll spoil it, I guess. The reason why I think that Golden State is the biggest threat in the Western Conference playing more than the Sixers... I mean, not Sixers. More than the Suns is because of the defense. I just think Golden State plays better defense than, because they're more of a scrap. Now, when they don't play defense, we've seen them get boat raced a couple times this year, and that definitely calls for concern. But I've also seen what they look like when they flip the switch, and I think that there is not a team in the NBA that looks as lethal when they flip the switch than Golden State does, and that's even with the Phoenix Suns, with Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal. And I also look at body language, man. It just doesn't seem like they're enjoying playing with each other that much, but they do have three players that can be lethal, and Golden State doesn't, but Golden State does have Klay, who can go for 30, does have Steph, who can go for 50, does have Draymond, who can go for 15, 15, and 15. I think that it's going to be a gauntlet. I think it's going to be a bloodbath as far as the Western Conference playing. And I just think with what we've seen this year, when they play to their strength, when they play their best, I think Golden State is the toughest matchup in the Western Conference playing. And I honestly think if they do get in the playoffs, because, I mean, obviously they may or may not, who knows. But if they do make it into the playoffs, I can see them upsetting a top seed, you know. That's just how good it is. I don't really see that for the Philadelphia 76ers, but Golden State, I could see it. I don't know. I mean, think about it. I'm not saying they will, but imagine if they play the Denver in the first round. I mean, it took Nikola Jokic a damn near half-court shot to beat them one of them games. So, I don't know. Damn, they're averaging. Yeah, I think Golden State's the biggest threat to come out the Western Conference. So, Western Conference playing. Western Conference playing. Let's move forward. You know what I don't envy? I don't envy people that are put into, for like, almost unfair situations. It's hard for me to see people struggle at things that, or struggle with hands that they weren't dealt, you know? Now, I'm not saying that Mark Pope is going to struggle. Who is Mark Pope, you ask? Mark Pope is the newest head coach for the Kentucky Wildcats. Obviously, we know that John Calipari took a job at Arkansas, leaving a head coaching vacancy at Kentucky. And Mark Pope, who used to play for Kentucky back in the day and won a national championship with them in 1996, he is now the newest head coach. He also was the coach for BYU for 5 years, which he was a pretty good coach at BYU, but it goes back to expectations. There is not as many expectations at BYU than there is in Kentucky. And that's kind of where we are at right now. I'm not saying that Mark Pope is going to fail. I'm not hoping that he fails. I hope that he succeeds. But again, it goes back to expectation. There is a much larger expectation at BYU. I mean, no, at Kentucky than there is at BYU. And I do think it was good that you got a person to come to the organization that was already in the organization as a player, so he kind of understands the pressure. However, the pressure is different. The pressure in 1996 is much different than it is in 2024. The team is looked at as better. Even though Kentucky was a good team back then, the team is looked at as different. The Kentucky is kind of looked as a NBA factory for kids. And while there hasn't been a level of championships that you would hope in the John Calipari era, that still is an expectation when you have players, when you have kids that are good enough and think that they're good enough and recruited and touted to be good enough to go, you know, to extend their career past college. And I think, I mean, he's there. Mark Pope definitely has was dealt a hand that he was not, that was unfairly given to him. But I'm sure, again, I'm not saying he's going to fail. This isn't me saying he's failing. This is me saying going to this job is going to be tough. Kind of like with, was it John Shire? John Shire, who used to play for Duke under Coach K, is now Coach K's successor. And while Duke did find themselves in the Final Four this year, in the Elite Eight, they haven't, it hasn't looked the same way under Shire than it has with Coach K. And now people are, even though they did make the Elite Eight, there's kind of a growing upset with John Shire in these Duke teams. Kind of the same way with Herbert Davis replacing or following Roy Williams. When you follow a legendary coach, it is almost, it's damn near impossible to exceed them. That's kind of why I am I'm shocked, even though it wasn't a legendary coach, that's kind of why I am so shocked of how great Dan Hurley has been with this UConn team. I know Calhoun was a long time ago, but you know what I'm saying? I wish nothing but the best for Mark Pope. I hope that he succeeds at Kentucky. But you're about to see a different level of Kentucky. You're about to see recruiting not be as strong with Mark Pope than it was for John Calipari. You're about to see, the level of wins, and I believe you're about to see that go down a little bit. Not saying that he can't exceed that, not saying that he can't change my mind, but that's just what it feels like, so I wish nothing but the best for him. I really do. But it's definitely going to be interesting going from BYU to Kentucky. I do think what helped him, obviously, was, he won a national championship there. But, yeah, BYU. And he was a great coach at BYU. Don't get me wrong. He was a really good coach at BYU for 5 years. But BYU ain't Kentucky. And I think he's about to find that out very quickly. So we'll see. We'll see. I will say that I hope that the fans, there's a level of patience with him. Because, again, he's not the same recruiter as John Calipari. He's probably not going to get the same level of high talent, five-star athletes that Calipari was getting. So I just hope that there's a level of patience with Mark Pope and understanding that Mark Pope can still be a great coach and not be as good as John Calipari. I mean, Herbert Davis is a great coach. He's not on the same level as Roy Williams, but, that doesn't – I think he's 7-3 right now in the playoff. I mean, in March. Like, come on now. So, we'll see. But shouts out Mark Pope for getting the job at Kentucky. Lastly, before we go, so O.J. Simpson passed away, and for people that don't know the past of O.J. Simpson, look it up. just look it up. Yeah, I'm not about to go through the entire history of O.J., but I will say this. Put aside all the bad stuff or alleged bad stuff that's happened with him. OJ was one of the greatest football players the NFL, or let me say football, has ever seen, both college and NFL. I see a lot of people talking nasty about OJ, and I'm not here saying that they're all wrong. I'm not here saying that they're not entitled to feel how they feel. I think everyone is entitled to have their own feelings, have their own opinions. I see a lot of people saying good riddance because obviously he passed of cancer. I think he was 76. All I will say is, we're still talking about a person, you know. I'm not here to change nobody's mind. I'm just speaking my thoughts. Whatever he was alleged of doing, whatever people think he did, whatever people don't think he did. The fact is, this person has passed away. And one thing that we do know, one thing that is proven, one thing that is clear as day, one thing that you cannot take from O.J. Simpson is he was one of the greatest football players to ever touch grass. And I pray for his family in this time of mourning, in this, obviously, because he had kids as well. So I pray for the family because I can't imagine, right? I can't imagine losing a family member, a close family member, and the whole world, not the whole world, but majority of the world pretty much going crazy and like rejoicing about my loved one's death. Again, I'm not here saying that these people are not right to feel how they feel or not right to believe how they believe. I'm not chastising anybody for feeling how they feel and reacting how they're going to react. This is just me reacting to it in real time. Not real time. Obviously, it happened, 2 days ago? But I don't know, man. It's tough. Obviously, I wasn't old enough to see OJ play football live. But I see stats. I see highlight tapes. I see what people have said, and there's not one person. People can talk about his character. People can talk about what he was accused of. People can talk about, you know, things that happened after the court case or whatever. One thing I've never heard anyone say is, yeah, OJ was trash at football. Not one. So I just pray for the family. Pray for the family. OJ Simpson passes away due to cancer at like 76. So I just pray for the family, and I pray for everyone that was involved. So, you know, but I just pray for the family, and I pray for strength throughout this time because a lot of the world is killing this man. There you have it, man. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Popular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. So, you know, if you like the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. It definitely means a lot. Subscribe. Also, if you listen to the DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts, it should be there. Please follow. Please subscribe. I understand that some people just watch on YouTube and some people just listen to DSPs. Both you guys are extremely important, and I appreciate both of you guys. So if you do listen on the DSPs, subscribe. It definitely, definitely means a lot. Also, follow the socials. Follow Instagram, follow TikTok. That's where you're able to get close to me, or we're able to go back and forth. That's probably the quickest way to get to me. We can debate there. You can tell me how much you appreciate or like my takes. You can tell me how much you hate it. Just be respectful. And yeah, I definitely appreciate it. You get to see longer reels. I know that I have to cut the reels on YouTube for a minute, but some of those reels that I cut are like 1.5, 2 minutes, 2.5. So you know, on social media, you get to see the actual reel, the whole reel. So definitely follow for that. It means a lot. And until next time, much love.